Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk ID. I am one of your co-hosts, Dr. Mati Fachwayo-Davis. I serve as a board member on the IDSA board, and I am also the director of health for the city of St. Louis. Listen, I'm not supposed to say when a podcast is my favorite, but y'all can come for me, future and past folks that I've had on. In this Black History Month, for this title, Black and ID, I want to firmly say 10 toes down. I have been waiting for this. I have dreamed of this. The ability for me to even have this with the just ID royalty on this podcast is Black history, is ID history, is medicine history. And I'm so excited to delve into this conversation. I'm going to allow my incredible guests to introduce themselves. So I will start with you, Michelle.
Well, thank you for that introduction. You guys can't see it, but we were all dancing right on into this beginning of this show. I am Dr. Michelle Cespedes. I am a tenured professor of medicine here at Mount Sinai, the Icahn School of Medicine here in New York City. I am the co-director of the Center for Translational Research here and serve as PI for more HIV-related research here in New York City with our Sinai clinics. I'm also the director of the inpatient HIV service here in the hospital. That's been an interesting journey as well. I have more interactions with just education, GME, and was recently named the associate program director, with really one of my areas of interest is really to help increase the number of Black and Brown folks that we have, not just going into medicine, but following my lead and coming into ID as well. The other hat I wear, or I should say just took off and passed to Allison, is that I am the recent, or just I just stepped down as being the chair of HIVMA through IDSA. So I think that's a good intro to head right on into Allison.
It's not even the complete intro, but we celebrate you. You are Black history, and thank you for all you do. But that was a beautiful segue to Allison, our current and reigning.
Correct.
Thank you, Mati, and chair-elect, immediate past chair, I think is what you are. I'm Allison Agu. I am a professor of adult and pediatric infectious diseases at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine in Baltimore. I am the director of our pediatric adolescent HIV/AIDS program, a clinical research, I say enterprise, that provides medical care in terms of Ryan White funded medical care to a diverse population of patients from 0 to 75, I say, because I lead both the pediatric as well as the young adult care clinics. I'm the PI of the International Maternal and Pediatric AIDS Clinical Trials site there. So I really do oversee maternal, pediatric, adolescent HIV research there. I am also an ID attending in the inpatient service. And for IDSA purposes, I am the current chair of the HIV Medicine Association. It's my pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to tell the people that last but certainly not least, the bestie, ex-co-fellow, Dr. Daryl McBride, bringing in the rear as only you can. Dr. McBride, tell the people who you are.
Hello, Dr. Daryl McBride. It's going to be hard to come after these ladies, but I am an assistant professor of medicine here at the Geisinger Commonwealth School of Medicine. I am also the regional assistant dean of student affairs for the medical school. I am also an infectious disease physician, clearly at Geisinger Medical Center, and I'm also the current program director for the Ryan White program here at Geisinger. I'm both Part C and B funded. I'm the PI for both of those grants. So thank you so much. I'm just happy to be on the stage.
And current HIVMA board member.
Oh, well, yes. Yes, that too. You know, you said make it brief.
Listen, not too brief now. We're not going to dim our light on this Black History Month podcast special. So I am so excited to bring you all together because this is a topic that is clearly important. It is a part of our identities. It is to be celebrated. But I think I'd be disingenuous if maybe we were a little bit nervous about having this discussion in light of where these conversations have gone. And I'm one to not just point at the elephant, but bring the elephant right to the front of the room. So it is not lost upon me. But I want to start off by just celebrating the leadership that is represented here. There was a time in IDSA's history where you would not see a board member, a past chair of HIVMA, current chair of HIVMA, and another board director, all Black, all incredibly diverse in talent and background. And that is to be celebrated. So I do want to start off just with that in mind, we are in an institution that values that and values us, and that feels good. And I just wanted to start us off. But I think it would be wonderful for me, as someone who has been a fan, who all of you have mentored from afar without even knowing it, to just tell us a little bit about your journey to ID. Why ID? Each of you could talk about this for the whole podcast. So I'm looking specifically for highlights, things that you think could be gems that kind of could tell people about how you got here. Michelle, you want to kick us off?
Sure. My residents asked me, you're so dynamic, why this? And I said, when I was in medical school, I said, I want to take care of people or keep people alive. So what kills people around the world, right? I said, TB, malaria, HIV. I was like, done. I've always wanted to be, travel the world. I'm Jamaican and Cuban, but I really love seeing the world. And I said, how can I travel on other people's money and still be smart, right? I can do ID all over the world. But in particular for me, so remember, I started med school in 94, and that was a particularly hard time for HIV. And I actually got a grant the summer between my first and second year of med school because they actually couldn't get enough health professionals to even put their hands on people with HIV, right?
Wow.
We're talking not just doctors, but doctors, nurses, psychiatrists, dentists even, right? And I said, how could I not want to take care of people who happen to look like me, right? I'm a New York City kid, I'm first generation, and this is who it's affecting. So interestingly enough, that grant actually took me to a substance abuse program in the Bronx, in the South Bronx, where every person there also had HIV.
Wow.
So the medical director there happened to be an activist. And I was like, I don't know, it's a white lady doctor, Dr. Zeller, shout out if you're listening. But I remember I was actually reading Assata Shakur's book. And I was like, I was doing my, not just Black Power stuff, but I'm like, this is who I am. This is people. We were advocating for people to actually not die of HIV in prison. This is exactly when people who look like us weren't being included in clinical trials. And just by coincidence, she happened to walk by and see the book I was reading. And she's like, oh, I know her and stuff like that. I'm like, who is this white lady? She doesn't know what. And it turns out that, not only was she an activist herself, but part of the struggle. And me, I took for granted that her skin color meant that she couldn't understand or what some of my motivation was. But she was actually there advocating for prisoners to do well and do better and be included in getting people in some of those early initial protease inhibitor clinical trials. So I think that actually spoke to me about not just doling out standard of care, but making sure people more affected by the crisis be included in some of the answers. And really, that's how I started to get into advocating that my community not just knows about the clinical trials, but are involved in it and are not necessarily an afterthought. And then all of the other social ails that go with it. Not just, we call it syndemics now, or drug use and poverty and all those things that go together. But those are exactly the people who are being left out of the dynamic as well. So I was at the right place at the right time. And to see people go from not having good brains with toxo or being blind with CMV to now complaining, right? Or saying, Dr. C, you're trying to recruit me when my brother had to beg to be on a clinical trial and now we're down to one pill once a day or injectables every 2 months and now you're trying hard. You're doing the hard play to get me into clinical trials. So it's good to have the history of it, but it was the right fit for me at the right time. And it speaks to my advocacy child, right? Speaking up for those who if I'm at the right place in the right time and at the table, learning how to speak up for them as well.
Gosh, without knowing your story before, but watching you lead for so many years, it makes so much sense. You have lived and have literally been living in your why every step of the way. And it was from day dot. So beautiful. Allison, I just saw your face. So I just know how much resonated. But tell us a little bit about your why.
IDSA Academy makes it easy to stay up to date on your continuing education credits and offers learning opportunities all year round. With a variety of maintenance of certification modules, a board practice exam, an antimicrobial stewardship curriculum, and additional rotating course offerings, stay current and confident with offerings from the IDSA Academy. Whether you're a seasoned practitioner seeking a comprehensive review or looking to learn something new, earn the credits you deserve. Explore all learning opportunities at idsociety.org/academy.
I am first generation as well. My parents are from the Caribbean, Grenada, but I grew up in Nigeria, actually. I come from a lens where growing up in Nigeria, my doctors were Black. There was no question that I could ever be what I wanted to be. I wanted to be Dr. Ezinga, who was my pediatrician. At the time I grew up in Nigeria, we were living a life of privilege as expats in Nigeria. But I played with all the little kids that were in our little compound, many of them who they were the kids of the people who took care of us as expats. And I remember a family that each one of their kids at like 17 or 18, you know, malaria, sickle cell, these kids died of things that I realized later on they shouldn't die from. And so I grew up seeing disparities, right? So, you know, I grew up with the coups and the things that happened. And when we came to the US, I came into the US at a time where HIV was sort of just hitting. And I remember having the conversations about don't sit on a toilet seat, don't do this, don't drink after anybody. And so I already had that lens of, I want to do something. People shouldn't die from things that are preventable once I knew vaccines. So I thought I was going to public health and go across the world. And I knew I wanted to do medicine, but I thought it was going to be go give care someplace else in the world because they needed it. And as I went to medical school and then in Baltimore, I was starting to realize as a med student and who sat with everybody who was coming in dying from HIV and hearing their stories. And their stories were not that different than people that I knew, people that were not in my community or what have you. And it made me shift my lens to, well, I didn't necessarily need to go someplace else. I wanted to come right here and provide care and address those disparities here. And then, you know, particularly going in med school from 95 to 99 was pre and then post, meaning when we started to see the great awakening of HIV. And I'm like, that's what I want to do. I want to address not just vaccine preventable illnesses. That's fine. But I want to be part of this big awakening and to get that to people that really look like me and are being basically massacred by this virus. So that's why I'd be in
need. Oh, so powerful. I don't know how we've been friends for this long. And I'm like over here, like I'm listening to the podcast for the first time. This is incredible. Daryl, bring us home. I know so much about your why, but your why is so powerful because from the first day of fellowship, you said who you were going to be. And I'm watching you be exactly who you said you were going to be, which is what we all have in common. So tell us a little bit about your why.
I'm going to be honest. My story is slightly different. I'm Black American. So, you know, my lineage goes back to the slave trade in the United States. My folk have been here for a long time. I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland, but I did not grow up seeing people like me in the field of medicine at all. Actually, my mother, who's a nurse, an RN, was like the first person to enter the medical field and like let me know that was something that was even available to me. I remember being in my undergraduate class and I took immunology for the first time and I was killing in that class to the point where my professor, I was eating them up. It was a graduate level class. And he came to me, he said, Daryl, you're ruining the curve. And I said, you know what? I initially started off not really wanting to do medicine. I was kind of focused on maybe being a veterinarian or something like that. And when I found out the body is really a universe within itself, how your cells interplay, how your immune system really works to do so many marvelous things, I found myself reading the immunology book for fun. And so when the test came, I was like overprepared. I had found myself really digging in. When my professor came to me, he was like, you should think about medicine. And I was like, not really sure. But I ended up pursuing that and I got into medical school. And really the defining moment for me in ID was my internal medicine residency. I remember going to my first outpatient clinic. And I would say maybe the third patient that I ever saw was this young gentleman who came in. He had STI concerns. I did a whole panel. I was like, man, I'm ready. Like, I'm a new doc. I'm learning. I actually diagnosed him with HIV from my first screen. I remember distinctively talking to the infectious disease physician at the time saying, like, what can we do? Like, what are the next steps? And she really walked me through the whole process. I was able to go and see him at her outpatient visit. And I followed him for the next 3 years. And I saw how antiretroviral medication can utterly transform someone from being destined for death to living a normal and healthy life in a way that I had never seen or followed any medical process before in my entire life. And for me, that was very influencing. This gentleman was Black. We were around the same age. And I felt like I was looking into a mirror. I saw someone who could have been me on any other day. And I saw so many things turn around for him just because he was connected to the right people. And when I learned how HIV affects our community in such a harsh and destructive way in comparison, for a number of reasons that we'll probably get into later in this talk, I found that people who looked like him needed to be there to direct him through his medical process. And that's really what got me into infectious disease.
I heard first generation across the board, which is me too. I heard HIV, which just the nerd in me and the ID leader in me just is like, wow, right? I heard by us, for us. We're all so, so, so passionate about community.
And you know what else? The other thread is that we were all conscious about it, right? I remember when I was in med school, I mentioned that grant that they had to beg people to put their hands on people with HIV. But I remember even asking some of my co-students or other workers, why aren't you guys interested in this too? And they said, you know, Black as well. They said they didn't want to be pigeonholed or thought of as being only the methadone doc or only taking care of Black patients who are sick and dying and yucky. I wanted to be thought of as a Black doctor, but not doing that or not only pigeonholed into those who take care of that. And I said, I will walk this path solo. But
and I love that you said that.
I always remember that when people said, I don't want to be associated with HIV. I'm like, oh.
And it takes me to the real talk, like the real, like, let's get into the nitty gritty, right? Because so far we're the American dream. Like, this should just be a joyful podcast, right? Like, our wives are incredible and we superheroes, we all have S in our chest. So now let's talk about training in the early days of even being on faculty. There's a lot of pain and shared trauma on this call. There's a lot of joy on this call. So I'd like each of you, and let's keep it open, just to talk about, did you see role models, not just who maybe look like us, but for the kinds of careers we wanted? Did you feel mentored and sponsored by intention? Did you feel that you were being equitably promoted and advanced? What is it to be Black and ID? Before we talk about just the power and the joy of what we're doing now and standing in our leadership and power, let's talk about that journey, because I do think it's important to keep it real on a Let's Talk ID platform, right? So let's talk about Black and ID. Anyone want to kind of touch on any of those themes, whether it's the role models or the mentorship sponsorship piece or the equitable advancement and promotion pieces? Daryl, I'm going to come to you. You went last. Let's start first. And I'd love to hear what your experiences have been like.
Well, when it comes to getting into infectious disease in particular, I knew what I wanted to do from jump. I came into fellowship really directed, understanding that I wanted to do HIV AIDS care, that I wanted to work with immunocompromised patients, and that I had a focus on LGBT and BIPOC folks. So I knew that coming out of the gate. So that was one of my definitive statements. When talking about support in that process, I think that was a little bit harder. I will say, coming into the gate for me, I'm already coming in the door with a lot of preconceptions about what my abilities are going to be for a number of reasons. I found it difficult initially to supersede those in other people's eyes. You know, people initially would not direct questions to me right away. I noticed that other fellows that I was working with getting opportunities that I would have loved to get initially. And my process was, I'm here to learn, I'm here to absorb. So I'm going to keep my head down, my nose to the grindstone, and really focus on learning as much as I can. So when it came to the point where someone spotlighted me for my clinical ability, I would eat them up from gate to the end. That was my goal. I did a lot of independent study. I did a lot of independent study about HIV. I did a lot of independent study about infectious diseases. Of course, we all had the same like learning opportunities, et cetera. But when it came to mentorship, that really didn't happen until later on in my fellowship for me, when I had proven clinically that I was actually quite reliable, particularly on the HIV front. I found out that I started to get opportunities because some of the doctors I was working with offered them and said on my behalf and vouched for me that Daryl is a fantastic HIV clinician. He was able to diagnose this quickly. I don't have to discuss antiretrovirals with him. Like, he's eating it up like I had planned to do from the beginning.
Eating it up.
I tried not to focus too much on the fact that opportunities weren't given to me initially and tried to focus on what I wanted to do, what I knew I could do, and what I could show people when it came to my capabilities. Now, did that lead to a mild amount of resentment? I believe so. Yes, it did. I did see people getting opportunities above me, but that hard work did ultimately culminate to the success that I currently have today. So I'm not too mad about it.
Period. I love the power and the honesty and the transparency in that. And I can vouch for it having watched it firsthand, as you watched firsthand. I really appreciate those reflections. Allison, your furrowed brow must make me come to you next. What parts of the, because I fused three questions in one in trying to be kind to let y'all go where you felt led to and feel more comfortable. Where does this hit for you?
I had a bit of a, I'd say an uncharted path. I was interested in infectious diseases. I was interested in adults and I was interested in pediatrics. Because of the intersectionality of all the things I was interested in, I met a lot of roadblocks in terms of people thinking or saying, well, you need to not do this or pick one or the other and trying to direct me one way or the other. And so, you know, coming out of even from med school to residency, it was just constantly, well, you need to pick one. You're indecisive. You're this, you're that. And I was lucky enough to not get my first choice for residency. I got my second choice for residency and ended up at Case Western in Cleveland. There at Case Western, I not only was in a city that, you know, didn't have HIV in youth, except they did, but I was able to not have one, but two MedPeds ID folks with Grace McComsey and Chandy John, who are amazing clinicians. And I could see Grace was, you know, MedPeds ID, not African-American, but definitely pro do what you want to do and help me start to chart that path. Was able to then see mentors like Barb Gripshober, who won the HIV Citation Award last year, you know, doing care the way I thought it should be done. And so I was able to see those early role models and to say, be validated in what I wanted to do. And when it was time to pick a fellowship, I was like, I want to do MedPeds ID fellowship, and met some of the same roadblocks, but then had people like Cindy Sears at Hopkins and Quantic Kim versus Seoul who advocated for me. So I'm the first MedPeds ID fellow at Hopkins, right? So I'm the first, I led the way. And then that was hard because I was straddling two departments and stuff. And so when you say mentors, I had to pick my super pack of mentors and find the people that were going to support me in what I knew was where I was going, this the adolescent HIV, thinking about intersectionality, all the pieces. Before we even called it that, I had to pull the mentors together. And there was, because there was not one person who did that. So there was a bit of a path that I needed to chart. But once I figured out who that team was, then this goes to your other question. They were role models. They were also people who would prop the door open for me to come in literally and made seat at the proverbial tables that I needed to sit at in order to step into what I didn't even know I was trying to get to, right? I was building, but they were like, let's help you get there. So those, that's why my brow was furrowing, because I was trying to think about how I could answer all these questions in one. And that's where.
Yeah, but that's real. And a pioneering spirit, it sounds lonely in places, but it sounds super joyful in the fact that you, when I talk to my mentee babies, I talk about my A team. And I think what sets us, a lot of us apart, is that we're fortunate, but we're also intentional about building an A team that at our highest and our lowest were able to get us there. But I've heard in both you and Daryl's stories that you individually willed yourself at points, right? It was lonely at times. And so Michelle, I'm gonna come to you because I have been very transparent with all of you, and a lot of people have heard the pain in my story, and I wanna address it up front before we move forward, because there's so much hope, so much beauty and power and joy on this call. But Michelle, what's resonated for you when you think about the journey?
When I think about the journey, I say the two things that resonate for me was being born at the right time and in the right place and getting paired with really one of the best mentors who had the insight to say, and I think I know a lot of you know that Judy Aberg has been my mentor. It's been 20 years now. I'm getting old fast. You know, she and I arrived at NYU at the same time when I started fellowship. And one of the things she said, she's like, you know, I said, I wanted to do clinical trials, but I'm a good talker. There aren't that many Black HIV. I want to be, I have to see patients. And similar to Allison, people were like, you know, you don't do both or choose one. And I said, no, right? I purposely went into ID because I didn't want to just do general medicine. I didn't just want to follow guidelines. I wanted to make them, right? I was like, I'm a scientist. I was a biophysics major. You can't tell me I can't do it. It's not that I'm not smart. But how do we do it? Really, the leadership of Aberg, and you know, she was more into cardiovascular stuff, and we started doing that. And she said, don't do anything that doesn't make your heart beat faster, right?
Love that.
She's like, you know, you have to have posters, but you know, she's like, you gotta produce, right? You gotta be productive, right? You wanna be promoted, you gotta have papers. Presentation at a conference is just an IOU for a paper. But one of the things that she said to me, don't do anything that doesn't make your heart beat faster. So I was interested in HIV and in women in particular, and then started kind of like, I take care of all the women at Bellevue NYU who are pregnant, and what are the things in HIV that specifically are specific to women? So then I got into cervical cancer and HPV, and kind of really had more of a trajectory with women in HPV through there. But the other beauty about Judy, she goes, I can help you become a professor and get promoted, but there are certain things as a Black woman or a Black doctor and a single solitary one, a singleton, that I can't help you with. So part of the ACTG, she said, I am going to help you get in touch with Ada, with Kim Smith. And there are certain things that I can't help you with, but here are some emails and people that you should touch base with, all right? And I said, thank you.
Wow.
But the other defining moment, it was when it was time to sign my first contract. So now it comes into money and who do you ask? Or is this enough? And who knows? And there's no other Black lady in our division ever to ask, who do you kiki with? Or is this right? Or does this look right? So I kind of went to my next best thing, right? My co-junior attending was Dimitri Daskalakis. He had just come back from Boston down to New York. And I said, hey, you and I have similar music tastes. We have similar interests. Right? You're the closest thing. You live in Brooklyn. This is the closest thing I got to another Black lady. What did you get on your contract?
Shout out, Dimitri.
So to be humble enough to ask you, how much are you getting paid? And it looked different than what my contract said.
Come on.
But I would never have known that had I not had another ally who had just signed his contract, who was willing to share that, right?
Mm.
So some of it is like, you know, we're lonely, but we have to, but there's some things I got to do, right? Just being Jamaican, don't put your hands on me, don't mess with my kid, and don't mess with my money. So having to find someone who's close enough and having both Judy and Dimitri as allies at an important, you know, pivotal moments in my career really made a big difference. And then this is where we pay it forward too, right? I remember ACTG and seeing, you know, sitting farther back early on in those meetings and starting to recognize other researchers by the back of their bald heads in the front row, all right? So I'm like, who am I asking? Who's going to be my mentor? And remembering thinking, you know, the people who get the grants or the people who get on the boards, they're self-selecting or recommending their friends, right? So how do we do it better, right? How do we make sure Daryl's on the board of HIVMA? How do we make sure we look with a different lens and look to different parts of the countries, not just, you know, the five institution on each of the coasts? How do we make sure now we've got a Black NP from Washington State, right, who's into prison medicine. We have family medicine. Hansel is Florida. But making sure things that maybe other people didn't recognize or weren't in the, you know, the group of five or everyone who knows each other, that we open our eyes and that we make sure that we're bringing people along as well.
Gosh, I love that so much. And while we're here, I want to definitely say a few things, right, that need to be said. I think you all did it so eloquently. I hope people really listened, because a lot of times whitewashing Black experiences means, oh, but they're fine. Obviously, I mean, she's the past chair, is a chair, they have a member, there's an IDSA board member, what can you complain about, right? And there was strength in what I just heard. There was victory in what I just heard. There was self-advocacy in what I just heard. There was resilience in what I just heard. But there was the only, there was alone, there was, may we all have a Judy or Aberg, and I know I didn't. May we all have allies like Dimitri, but we all did not, okay? And I want to shout out the fact that for me, it was coming up in training at a time where affirmative action was a cuss word, and it's come back round full circle even higher. It's the race card can be used against me, but I can't use it. It's the sum total of the reason I get a position or a scholarship or an award is because I fit a quota. Can't because of my talents, right? It's going into an evaluation and being told you should go into HIV medicine because you're Black and the patients are Black. It's, you know, having faculty members tell me, ask me if I swung from trees in Africa, or did I have a pet lion and laugh? And obviously I must laugh. It is the fact that my specific intersectionality, right? It could be misogynoir one day, it could be racism, it could be a microaggression, a macroaggression, it could be just regular old misogyny and sometimes xenophobia, right? But it is being very honest about the fact that, you know, I've got an incredible A team, but there was a time in that journey where there wasn't a Judy with me right there. And there wasn't allies, and I shrank and I lost myself and I tried to be something that I wasn't. And what really failed me specifically, because I should still be in academics, right? The other elephant in the room is the rest of you are still there. I am outside of it, thriving, pioneering, and very necessary. But my dream did not come into fruition. I left in self-advocacy, and I think some of what I hear from y'all did not exist. Some of what I hear from y'all, I you know, there's an argument that I should have pushed harder. But what I hear from y'all is that the systems don't always create that for us, and that those tides are turning. And boy, am I proud to be an IDSA where we exist, and we exist on boards and in leadership capacities. But those journeys, whew, those journeys haven't been easy. And there's a lot of the only that I heard in all of these stories. And I need to say that out loud. I need to talk about what that looked like and felt like. And because I know we're gonna, you know, we're coming to the end of this, and I wanna move to that, but I see Allison and Daryl have something to add. And I, to honor the truth of my story, I needed to say some of that out loud and be very clear about the pain in that and the lack of intentional diversity of excellence. I love my basic science colleagues and clinical researchers, but what was lacking for me was an appreciation of the value in someone who has the superpowers I possess. Strong communicator, loves community engagement. You know, being told don't go into DEI or disparities, you'll never thrive. There was a lack of intentionality behind the diversity of excellence, because Emma Tifadza Klachwayo Davis would also and should also be valued in those spaces. And I'm so glad that my A team and my excellence and brilliance have me thriving outside of it, but it should have never been the way that it went down. I wanted to say that with intention. Allison, what are you thinking, my friend?
As I am in leadership and intern selection and different things, and you definitely want to make sure that people see, people meaning the pipeline and people coming up, see that you can make it, right? And I think sometimes we try to, we're doing it here, emphasize the journey that was positive, but you're absolutely right that there are things, there is a lot of pain behind that, right? There is a lot of, whether or not you realize it or not, the extra things that you do constantly and the tax that you pay because you feel the questions about whether or not you deserve to be in the room and whether you deserve what you have, right? I've had the questions of, oh, was that on a scholarship? Was it an affirmative? Like there is that. We all probably have the experience of trying to minimize or make our Blackness less threatening.
There we go.
Right. So I've had the experience of having being told it's time to cut your locks or to pull them back, or maybe you shouldn't do this way. Maybe you shouldn't wear this or, you know, that, or maybe you shouldn't say this or that, or I slip up and say a word that I sounded too Black when I said it, and oh man, I'm going to be judged a certain way. So we actually, I'd say for me, and I'm going to extend it, say probably others have had that, where you, the bar for yourself is so high, I can never slip up and say a curse word. I can never do this or I can never do that, because I will then ruin it for everybody behind me.
And the weight of that, Allison, the weight of that, You know, I struggled with really debilitating test-taking anxiety, and I was the first, because I was the first of two Black people at my medical school at the time, and Daryl and then I were the first of two for a very, very long time in fellowship, and I was the only Black person on faculty, you know, like that the weight of that, and everybody can tell you what you should have done, but the weight of just existing as the only, and the lack of grace, because I became an associate program director, and oh, have we offered mental health support, and have we offered this, did we consider that, and I was like, whoa, that's beautiful to see, but I don't know that I saw it in the same way, because for me, it was too loud, too lazy, too aggressive, unproductive, right? There wasn't just the same grace, it felt like. And so us being in these positions and us having, like, being the beautiful way that Michelle put it, has really been able to elevate the culture and elevate and create those metrics that allowed for the kind of inclusivity that I think IDSA has benefited from by us being here. Daryl, what are you thinking here, my friend?
I came in to my fellowship with a clear idea of what I wanted to do. I was actually screaming it. Maybe the people in the back couldn't hear me, but I was very, very clear. And I wasn't necessarily afforded opportunity to do those things until I met a white man with a plan named E.P. Barrett, who swooped in. Who swooped in, and I found out later, did a lot of championing for me behind the scenes that I didn't realize clearly until I left the institution about how good I was clinically. And then doors started opening for me. Monty can verify this. I mean, we were in clinic being told by some of the people in clinic, the reason why we were so successful with our patient population is because we were Black and the patients were Black. To the point that had affected me so significantly, to the point where I said, you know what? I'm going to go to a place where there is barely a Black person to be seen. And I'm going to focus on HIV to prove to you that my clinical excellence crosses all race, gender, anything, all the lines. I went to Danville, Pennsylvania. I absconded from St. Louis and moved to Danville, Pennsylvania. You know what I mean? And here, I was able to still build a program from the very beginning without any support initially other than go forth and prosper, other than a word. I had to find resources. I had to find my own mentorship. I had to find all of the things. And that is because I had to do it before. When you're used to struggling, another struggle is just another day. I'm glad that I made it, right? I'm glad that I can be here having this discussion with all of you. But how many people could do it? The people who are on the top, who've skimmed the surface, who made it against odds, we're here talking to you now, but there's many other people who could have walked through that door if given the opportunity with the directed support that other people of other race and social background would have gotten initially. And that's the whole point of it, right? We rise to the top because we are able to overcome these several obstacles. But the question is, should we even have to do that in the beginning, right? We've already proven our success. We made it through medical school, child. We're sitting here with doctorates looking at you guys in the face saying, show us where we can go, give us opportunities. And then still we have to struggle to make it through that. So why is that occurring? What is the thought process behind that? And how can we make some of those barriers go away? Because despite what you may believe, even though people consider affirmative action to be a curse word, it doesn't even help Black people out to the degree that it helps out a white woman. Okay, so roll it back if you need to. The excellent people will still push on through. We just need opportunity and setup. And that's the whole purpose. Give us opportunity to be successful. Give us people in the field that we can see ourselves in. How many people have you met? How many students have you affected that said, I never knew I could do this until you were here? I get it all the time.
And Michelle and Allison gave it to me. I mean, You have said nothing but a word. Do you know what I'm saying? And so I'm looking at this call and the people listening to this, you cannot really understand the joyfulness that we are having watching each other's boxes, responding to each other, just seeing each other in the same spaces, right? Because at the end of the day, we've given you our full, transparent, and quite frankly, very kind honesty on this podcast. This is a very kind version, but the joyfulness that I'm feeling in this, because whew, to be an IDSA, to be at a time such as this, in this Black History Month, to be Black in ID and lead is just a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I would love for us to reflect on that, to kind of end this off. What is this, in reflecting on those journeys and thinking about this, what is this Black History Month, this Black in ID, this leadership that you have all, I mean, I've watched, I wanted to be just like you two. Me and Daryl were fellows together, just want to be just like you two. So what is the message that you'd like to leave with folks before we get off the call? And Michelle, I think you have something that's bridging. I think it's from before into this. I'll let Michelle.
I actually wanted to respond to something that you said, Mati, about, you know, I left academia and I, you know, I lost my dream. And I really wanted to make it clear to everybody, we belong in every space.
Come on, Michelle.
Right? We kind of get into this, I have to be a tenured professor and this is the echelon and this is what medical school and this is what success looks like. I don't care. Mati, you are phenomenal, whether you are an academic institution now, whether you go back, you have the option to go back if you want to,
sure do.
Right? I would recruit you here in a second, right? But you deserve to be where you're good, where you're happy. Like Judy said, don't do anything that doesn't make your heart beat faster. I had a friend about 5 years ago tell me, Michelle, I know you see yourself this, but maybe just look 10 or 15 degrees to the right or the left. That might be where you're supposed to be. And, you know, that was pre-COVID. And look at that, right?
Because I just love that you said that, sis, because I want the young people to hear it.
I think even our friends who go into pharma and you're going to this for the money, you went to this. I deserve you in pharma, too. I couldn't be prouder of Kim Smith. I look and smile every time I see her. I look at her haircut. I'm like, she looks great. We deserve it to be in every space. There is no wrong answer. And you're not less than if you're not in academia or if you don't get that professor, like, you know, I need this to prove who you are. You don't have to do that, or it doesn't have to be that, or that's not just what success looks like.
And I need the trainees to wake up to that point, because I'm there now, but I wasn't there when I left. Let's be clear. And I still stand by the fact that that dream of mine, should have been an option.
It still is an option. All door, no doors
closed. But I'm thriving and I'm pioneering and I am defining the diversity of excellence. You know what I mean? I'm defining that diversity of excellence in ID right now. But I love the fact that we're upholding, and I have got to shout out with intention the George Counts Interest Group that paved the way for all four of us, that mentor us so quietly and with intention. And when I left academia, who came to the fore with intention and lined up a host of Black OGs, as I call them, right? These are the folks, Dr. George Counts, Dr. D. Banks, Celia, I'm talking about Ada, I'm talking about Dial, the list goes on. And they came and they showed me that diversity of excellence I hadn't seen. They came up from pharma leadership, you know, ego called from Emory. I saw people leading clinical trials. I saw people in public health. I saw people and they surrounded me and they told me I would be okay. And they said they would not let me fail. And we have to honor our ancestors and our forefathers because they're right here in ID. And IDSA owes a debt of gratitude to the Black leadership on this call was founded upon the intentional leadership and foundational leadership of the George Counts Interest Groups and those that continue to surround us. Allison, where are you trying to take the people as you reflect on just this? I mean, I can't stop looking at y'all on this call. It's so joyful. But Allison, what are you thinking, my friend?
So one, thank you for making the space for this conversation. It was not easy to have us all in the same Zoom call with our various schedules. And thanks for just moderating the conversation the way you have. We've gone through joy, pain, you know, all the things. If I had to leave a message, it would be one for the trainees that are coming up. It really is following your passion, right? It's absolutely right. If you don't follow your passion, when you have to do the grants or this, you won't be able to do it. It's got to be something, you know, Michelle says it races your heart. I say that it's your passion about, and being truly passionate and being clear about whose passion it is, because, you know, I'm Caribbean and, you know, someone else may say you have to be the doctor of this and it has to be your passion. That's one. Two, it is look for mentors that see all of you, because Mattia, I'll be honest. When you told me your story at ID Week, my heart broke, because this whole version of the story we're telling now that we are colorblind is actually hurtful to trainees, and it would be hurtful to me. I need a mentor who sees all of me, and me, my Blackness is a critical part of me. Black is a construct. But my experience as a Black Caribbean first-generation woman is central to how I view the world, my passions, my all of it. And to say that you don't see color says you don't see me. And so I have had mentors that are not Black, who I come in the room and that today they're like, how are you feeling about, you know, what's going on with whatever the issue is? Or how has it felt being in that space? Because, you know, I noticed you were the only one. And seeing and acknowledging my experience. If your mentor is like, well, I don't see that. That's not the mentor you want or need. I am a full and complete person, including my Blackness. And I think we need to truly celebrate it, not remove it, but recognize how that enriches not just me and my community, but enriches all of IDSA, HMDB, everything, the color.
The message. I knew I had to end the podcast with a message, baby, because
I only regret that they can't see her arms in this sleeveless outfit. The arms, the dreads, I mean, everything.
It's giving. And let me tell you, babies, we talking to you right now, all trainees, but especially in this Black History Month, our Black babies across disciplines, but especially in ID, you are going to be okay, because we have learned from our OGs and George Counts, and we are here. And not only are we leading, we are visible, we got you.
We serve as our own green book. We will tell you the safe places. We will recommend you for the jobs that you didn't hear. And like Daryl said, you don't just need a mentor, you need a champion. Someone who's at those seats of the table, mentioning your name. They might not be writing papers with you, but they make sure your name is entered into the chat when you don't even know it. So we have to be mindful to be champions for everybody else.
This is my favorite season. I call it my auntie season. We are nominating people from awards, and we are watching the next generation. Seeing Jacinda on that stage, seeing Lance on that stage last year.
And we are pronouncing people's names correctly when they're on the podium.
Period. Daryl, what's your message to take us home?
You know, Black History Month ain't long enough for me. It's shady that we got the shortest month, so I just want to say that out loud on this podcast. I think number two, American history is your history. You are not encompassed by the past history of slavery. That is not who you are. You are someone who has built this country. The successes of this country are built on your blood, sweat, and tears. So when you look at your opportunities in America, know that America is for you. When they say make America great again, they mean make it for us, okay? Because we made America great to begin with. So I know you're talking about me when you say that. In addition, look at us. We are first generations. We are Black American. We come from many different portions of the Black diaspora. And we are sitting here looking at you in the face through adversity and still have made it. So we can make it. You can make it. Imposter syndrome is a thing. It will haunt you every day of your life. But no, surround yourself with people who believe in you the way that you should be believed in. People who trust in your ability to make great and awesome decisions and trust in your ability to persevere. I believe in all of you. I think you can be here. And I'm looking forward to the next generation of wonderful Black physicians to join infectious disease, because we're about to wreck it up. I'm looking forward to the 2030s.
Wreck it up. Okay? Let me tell you something. I cannot thank you enough. This has been soul food. This has been joyful. This has been affirming. This exceeded what I thought it would be. I hope that people understand why this is my favorite podcast and why this was so important. Thank you for trusting me in this space with your stories. I love y'all. And thank you to IDSA for allowing us to just come on here and be our unapologetic full selves. The future is now. We are the future, but most importantly, we are Black history. So with that, I will sign off. Thank you so much for joining us.
Was produced by the Infectious Diseases Society of America and edited and mixed by Bentley Brown.